I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, debate day. This could prove to be a make or break moment in the election as Vice President Harris and former President Trump meet face to face for the first time on a Philadelphia stage. Game plan. A former NFL football star is bringing his fight against human trafficking and child exploitation back to Capitol Hill. Ambitious mission. Polaris Dawn is attempting to take private citizens where they have never gone before. On a spacewalk. And drawing a crowd. Pope Francis celebrates Mass for nearly half the population of East Timor. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Nicholas of Tolentino, our top story tonight. We are just hours away from the first presidential debate between former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris. Tens of millions of people will be tuning in to watch them tonight on the debate stage in Philadelphia. It could be the only time voters see them face off before November 5th. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
Good evening, Tracy. The debate tonight between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump will not include a live in-person audience. Instead, you'll only see the moderators and, of course, the two candidates, whose microphones will be muted while the other is speaking.
The last time Donald Trump debated a Democrat, that Democrat, Joe Biden, soon after left the race for the White House. Tonight, a much different story, as Vice President Kamala Harris and the former president will lay out their beliefs on the debate stage and no doubt go after each other.
He's prepared for this debate. He's ready for tonight, and he's ready to talk about why your life was better when he was in office, and why would you want to vote for four more years of what we're in right now, which is what you're going to get with Kamala Harris.
You know, I don't know how putting her into a box or a classification is useful. I think she is someone who believes in getting big things done, being able to build the right kind of coalitions in order to do it, and actually building an economy that serves everybody and not just some.
But the Trump campaign blasts Harris for not answering voters' questions since she took over the top of the ticket.
I believe that Americans know that she is incapable of doing the job that she is auditioning for because she is currently in the White House and failing. Inflation is higher than it has been since before she took office. Housing is unaffordable. The southern border is open. We are in wars abroad. She is an absolute failure, and she is dangerously liberal, and that is what we will prove tonight.
The governor of Massachusetts says Harris knows exactly what she needs to do tonight.
And that's to spell out the very different vision that she and Donald Trump have for this country.
Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre earlier told us President Biden will watch the debate tonight. Meanwhile, today at the White House, he hosted two championship sports teams before heading to New York City to get ready for tomorrow's 9/11 remembrance. The president and vice president also plan to travel to the September 11th sites in Pennsylvania and at the Pentagon. So tomorrow could be a break from the campaign.
Now, ABC will be hosting tonight's presidential debate, which kicks off at 9 p.m. Eastern. Some other networks will also broadcast a live feed. No matter where you watch it, the debate could be another pivotal moment in an already unpredictable presidential campaign. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, joining us now is Brandon McGinley. He is the editorial page editor at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Brandon, great to have you back on the show. This big debate takes place tonight at the National Constitution Center in Philly. But even before today, the candidates have already spent quite some time in Pennsylvania. In fact, Vice President Harris, I guess she spent about 5 days or so in Pittsburgh prepping for the debate, making some pit stops at local businesses and meeting with voters. So, Brandon, why did the vice president spend so much time in Pittsburgh, and how much does that area matter when it comes to winning the Keystone State?
Yeah, I mean, I think Pennsylvania is in almost every analysis the tipping point state, the state that is most likely to be the one that determines who wins the White House. And while we know that Philadelphia is the biggest part of the state and the areas around Philadelphia are extremely important, Pittsburgh and its surroundings taken together are probably the swingiest part of the state, where you're most likely to find those voters who are on the fence in large numbers. It's also the part of the state where Donald Trump has made significant inroads since 2016. And so parking Kamala here for nearly a week kept her certainly top of mind for voters here for a while.
Yeah, Brandon, what are the issues that matter the most to Pittsburghers?
Yeah. So I think that something that when we think about why Harris hasn't picked up quite as much ground in Pennsylvania as she has in some other states like Wisconsin and even North Carolina and Georgia, you know, the New York Times recently did an analysis that showed that Pennsylvania had one of the slowest recoveries of any state since the pandemic economically. And Pittsburgh has had, within Pennsylvania, particularly slow recovery. So I think there's a sense of anxiety here, a sense that we are being left behind, a sense that the state hasn't caught up. And that this city, which had a lot of optimism for a long time, that's really fading. So I think that that kind of creates some headwinds for Harris.
Yeah, in Pennsylvania, especially in southwestern Pennsylvania, where I grew up, but fracking, that's actually on top of mind for a lot of folks. I know a lot of people make their living from that. Do you expect this to come up in the debate tonight, that is? And how much weight do you think that issue carries with Pennsylvanians?
I think it's more symbolic. I mean, there certainly are a lot of jobs attached to fracking, and not just the extraction itself, but the contractors and the other support services that go along with it. But I think that you'll hear a lot about fracking because the national media and the national kind of political analysts think that Pennsylvanians really care about it. And we do, more than other states. But I think that it's a lot more about the broader message about the economy. And fracking stands in for that as a sense of who sees Pennsylvania and the Pennsylvania economy as being central to their policy package.
Yeah, what are you hoping to hear from them and also see from the candidates?
Oh, gosh. Seriousness would be great. moral seriousness about the political situation that we share, a sense that they, whoever wins, is going to have to be president for all of America. And I think both need to demonstrate very clearly that they understand that there's a lot of anxiety on both sides, political anxiety, economic anxiety, and that being, I know this may be too much to ask for, being a calming force is going to be important going forward.
Brad, let me ask you this really quick. Almost out of time, but we know the polls right now have Trump and Harris basically neck and neck. But what do you hear? You know, polls aside, what are you hearing kind of, you know, on the ground there in Pittsburgh? Who's maybe resonating the most with Pennsylvanians?
It's a good question. I live within the city. I spend a good deal of time in the suburbs, a swingy part of the suburbs that's flipped between Democrats and Republicans in recent years. It's hard to say based on just what you see driving around. But I've been surprised by the extent of the visible support for Trump and the lack of visible support for Harris. This could change on a dime, but right now I feel like what I'm seeing reminds me more of 2016 than 2020.
All right, we're going to leave it right there, Brandon. Great to have you on. Thanks so much for weighing in. God bless.
Yes, thank you.
All members of the House Judiciary Committee held a hearing looking at the effects of the Biden-Harris administration's open border policies. Families of those hurt or killed by illegal migrants gave emotional testimony, including a mother whose daughter was killed by a 16-year-old illegal migrant.
This is not a political issue. This is a safety issue for everyone here living in the United States. Not only was Kayla's life put at risk and taken, so many other children and adults were at risk.
This is what happens when you have an administration that doesn't care about border security, that prioritizes aliens over Americans and legal immigrants, and that refuses to enforce immigration laws in the interior of the country.
ICE officials say about 2.5 million illegal immigrants have been released into the country awaiting a court date, and more than 500,000 others are gotaways. Republicans say those numbers are much higher and add a considerable number of migrants have engaged in criminal activities once they have settled, despite Justice Department figures showing otherwise. A former NFL star, Tim Tebow, joined a bipartisan group of lawmakers to introduce a new piece of legislation that will help identify and rescue victims of child sexual abuse. It is called the Renewed Hope Act of 2024. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales spoke with a Heisman Trophy winner about why this new law is needed. Eric.
Well, good evening, Tracy. Yes, the 36-year-old popular Christian athlete and founder of the Tim Tebow Foundation continues his work to combat human trafficking. Now those efforts are paying off big. A new piece of legislation has been introduced to enhance the capability to identify and locate more than 50,000 unidentified children who've been abused, raped, and even tortured.
It's not just images. It's not just videos. It's boys and girls that are in the worst moments of their life, and then people are celebrating it, meditating on it, focusing on it, reliving it over and over and over again.
The Renewed Hope Act will fight against child exploitation by hiring hundreds of new computer forensic and criminal analysts and hire experts in victim identification to track the location of these children in need and put the abusers behind bars. Lawmakers say it's a good start.
America ought to be committed foursquare, fully, relentlessly to stopping the scourge of child sexual abuse material.
These children that we are here today to advocate for are the voiceless and the vulnerable. And together, the Thiebaud Foundation and the members here are committed to ensuring that we give them that voice.
Thiebaud tells me saving kids is his passion and believes God gave him his talents and platform to help others.
You know, I believe the best definition for a calling is an urgent divine invitation to accept responsibility for a particular task. And that's our responsibility. We better be willing to do whatever it takes.
And this is just the beginning. You want to see more legislation like this?
We want to see legislation. We want to see rescues. We want to see impact. We want to see hope being brought to boys and girls. And we want to see lives flourishing once again.
It is important to note that the Renewed Hope Act is up against the clock for this session of Congress. Only 10 legislative days remain before Congress recesses for October, and any leftover bills would have to be taken up in a lame duck session of Congress. That won't happen until after the November elections. Tim Thiebaud tells me that he hopes lawmakers can get it done. Tracy.
Well, Eric, I was going to ask you about the ceremony today honoring the 13 service members that were killed in Afghanistan. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I tell you, it was a powerful and emotional ceremony held in the Capitol Rotunda. Now, House Speaker Mike Johnson presented the families of the 13 service members killed during the Afghanistan withdrawal of 2021 with the Congressional Gold Medal. That is the highest civilian award bestowed by Congress.
Surely they didn't serve so that we would honor them, although we do. They didn't remain loyal so that they would be remembered, though they certainly are. They did it because they had a higher calling, as was said, the call to protect the promise and the dignity of America and the blessing to grow up freely and safely.
This incident has become politically charged, with Republicans assigning blame for the chaotic exit squarely upon President Biden and the decisions by his administration. Now, the White House has fired back, saying that the administration was simply following through with the plans laid out by former President Donald Trump. Now, one thing is for sure, these 13 fallen service members' sacrifices will never be forgotten. Tracy.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate that. At least 19 people are dead after an Israeli strike on a tent camp in a designated humanitarian zone in Gaza. The Hamas-run government says the strike left craters up to 32 feet deep and the death toll may rise. The Israeli military says that it used targeting against a group of militants. This comes as U.S. Secretary of State calls on Israeli forces to make fundamental changes after the killing last week of a 26-year-old Turkish-American activist who was protesting in the West Bank. The U.S. and Britain accuse Iran of supplying Russia with missiles to use in its war against Ukraine.
Russia has now received shipments of these ballistic missiles and will likely use them within weeks in Ukraine against Ukrainians.
In a joint statement, the U.S. and Britain called the ballistic missile transfers, quote, a direct threat to European security. The two nations also said they would impose penalties, including sanctions on individuals involved in Tehran's ballistic missile program. At least one person is dead after Ukraine says dozens of drones into Russia. The overnight attack targeted several regions, including Moscow and surrounding areas. A woman was killed just outside of Moscow, where drones hit residential buildings and started fires. The Kremlin calls the strikes, quote, an act of terror. And Ukraine's second major drone strike into Russia this month. Battery of a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including shoot for the stars. You've heard the saying. Now a billionaire is taking the idea and walking with it. We'll explain. And abortion on the ballot. The Missouri Supreme Court decides whether it will go before voters. That's after the break. The state Supreme Court in Missouri says a proposed constitutional amendment that would dramatically expand abortion can remain on the ballot in November. In question is the state's Amendment 3. It received thousands of signatures to be included in November. Last week, a judge said the amendment fails to mention the specific laws to be repealed. Currently, the state protects unborn babies throughout the 9 months of pregnancy, except in cases of medical emergency. And for more, let's go to Mary Catherine Martin, senior counsel at the Thomas More Society, which argued before the state Supreme Court on behalf of pro-lifers. Mary Catherine, good to be with you today. A lot to cover, but first, I want to get your reaction to the ruling and what it means for pro-lifers.
Well, it's devastating, really, in a couple of ways. One is just the incredible scope of the amendment that faces us. It goes so far beyond abortion and so far beyond what we had under Roe versus Wade. And it will remove such protection as, you know, we've been able to achieve here in Missouri that, it, you know, that is devastating on its own. But then it's also, you know, it's good to guard your heart in this business. And a lot of things don't go the right way. But in this case, the law was exceptionally clear. That is, in fact, how we won in the trial court. And it's hard to accept the effort and the lengths that even judges will go to cater to the forces behind an amendment like this. It's hard to be that close to that kind of decision and then accept that this is what we're going to have to live with.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, the lower court said the ballot initiative did not mention the specific laws to be repealed. Did the state Supreme Court address this in the ruling today?
Not yet. What they did was reverse his ruling and put it back on the ballot and defer opinion. So we don't know the specific ground on which they reversed his decision, but his decision was extremely straightforward. And the grounds presented for reversal were extremely gymnastic in their reaching for ways to avoid the result. And, you know, I'm not looking forward to reading it, but there is no good reason to have made this decision.
Yeah, we're almost out of time, but I do want to bring this up for those who maybe, you know, don't live in the state, they don't know really much about Amendment 3. I know it says in part the state government will, quote, shall not deny or infringe upon a person's fundamental right to reproductive freedom. The initiative also explicitly says that it would, quote, prohibit any regulation of abortion. Now, if this ballot initiative passes on November 5th, tell us what this could mean for the unborn.
Well, it leaves only the possibility of regulating abortions past a very late date in pregnancy. They've redefined fetal viability and with an exception for maternal health that includes mental health. And so really, you know, babies of very late gestational age whose mother's health have not been burdened by their pregnancy are the only abortions that the state can regulate or limit. So we're going from 99% prohibited to 99% permitted and protected and even funded.
Mary Catherine, what about the wording on the ballot? I mean, do you think that could be confusing at all to people?
Well, it was the wording of the measure on the actual petition that was the subject of the lawsuit on which we won anyway. The wording on the ballot is a summary of some of the effects. It's actually a little bit more understandable, comprehensible than the wording of the actual measure, which was extremely deceptive. But the you know, there's no way to capture in 100 words what this is going to do to Missouri laws. So, you know, people really need to go out and research the actual effects and everything that could be comprehended in all matters relating to reproductive health care, not even just reproductive health care, but all matters relating to it.
Well, Mary Catherine, thank you so much for coming on, for your insights and all that you do. We appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you so much.
Space, the final frontier, and one billionaire is attempting to go boldly where no private citizen has gone before.
Ignition. Go Falcon, go Solaris.
Copy, 1 Alpha.
Early this morning, a Falcon 9 rocket lifted off from Kennedy Space Center. Tech entrepreneur Jared Isaacman shared the cost of the five-day trip with SpaceX, including the development of new spacesuits that will be tested once they leave the capsule. If successful, the mission will mark some milestones, the first spacewalk by non-professional astronauts, as well as the farthest journey from Earth by anyone since NASA's moon landings. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, strength through the Eucharist. The International Eucharistic Congress is in full swing in Ecuador. We have a report from Quito. Plus, talk about devotion. We take you to the country where thousands of people waited 12 hours to see the Holy Father. Eucharistic Congress in Quito, the theme of the second day was Brotherhood Redeemed in Christ. After the morning mass, participants listened to several testimonies of faith. It was a time of reflection and sharing for many young people attending the event. And joining us now from Quito, Ecuador, is Paula Araza, EWTN news journalist. Paula, great to be with you today. So what more can you tell us about the start of this Congress, and especially how people in Quito are taking part?
Good evening, Tracy. Well, it all started with the opening mass. It was a beautiful moment. About 25,000 people joined, and we saw 2,000 kids receiving their first communion. So it was a very emotional and a very intense moment. We had a message from the Pope. We were able to see the papal envoy, a cardinal coming from Venezuela, which ties up perfectly with the themes that we're speaking about. The main theme is fraternity to heal the world. But yesterday, we were able to speak about a wounded world. And we spoke about the political instability in Latin America, but we also spoke about so many wounded places around the world. But the purpose of all of this is to be healed through the Eucharist, the power of redemption that the Eucharist has.
And I know the theme today is Brotherhood Redeemed in Christ. What have been the strongest testimonies that you have heard?
Exactly, yes. It's Brotherhood Redeemed in Christ. And we had a very strong testimony. It's Margaret Felker. She's the president of this fund, an educational fund for kids with little resources here, and even for them to go to college in Ecuador. She comes from the United States. She has this background story, heartbreaking background story. Her son went to sophomore year here in Quito, in this exchange, and he got lost. They never found him again. So out of this sorrowful situation, out of this pain, she was able to rebuild, and she made this educational fund for kids in Ecuador. That was a beautiful testimony. We've had so many other testimonies. We've had the cardinal coming from my country, from El Salvador, Rosa Chavez, and he spoke about St. Oscar Romero. I'm having this here with me because he gave me this cross, which has typical art from El Salvador. So it's been a very beautiful display of the universality of the church.
Yeah, and I know the Congress continues until Sunday. What are some of the highlights for the rest of the week?
We are expecting different themes throughout the week. Thursday is a very special day because Quito will have different masses in different languages. So that's a very important moment. And then on Friday, we will continue with our topics. On Saturday, we would have the Eucharistic procession, which is one of the most important moments. We will see Quito streets filled with people in adoration. And at the end, it will end at the Basilica of the National Vow, which is a beautiful architecture. And on Sunday, we'll be back to the closing mass. And it just reminds us of the importance of the Eucharist. Why is it the center, the source and summit of our faith?
Oh, Paula, thank you so much for coming on today. We really appreciate it. God bless you. Finally, tonight, Pope Francis is concluding his visit to East Timor, the third leg of his apostolic journey. The South Asian nation is considered one of the most Catholic countries in the world, and today its citizens showed why. EWTN Rome correspondent Courtney Morez has more.
Hundreds of thousands of Catholics were present at Pope Francis' Mass today, here in East Timor, one of the most Catholic countries in the world. 98% of the small island country's population is Catholic. Pope Francis's visit marks the 25th anniversary of the country's independence, in which the Catholic Church played a significant role in defending human rights. Huge crowds lined the streets of the capital city of Dili for miles for the Pope's arrival on Monday, with children waving Vatican flags and cheering enthusiastically. At the welcome ceremony, Pope Francis was received at the presidential palace by East Timor's president José Manuel Ramos Horta, a Nobel Peace Prize laureate and a prominent figure in the country's movement for independence. In the Pope's speech to local government officials at the palace, Francis underlined the importance of safeguarding to prevent every kind of abuse. On his second day in East Timor, Pope Francis visited a school for children with disabilities. Children dressed in traditional attire greeted the Pope together with the nuns who run the school. The Pope then went on to Dili's Cathedral of the Immaculate Conception, where he spoke to clergy and religious about the importance of evangelization. At Pope Francis's meeting with local Catholics at the cathedral today, I spoke with one religious sister who told me that when her order arrived here, they were shocked to discover that some young girls living in the mountains walked for 3 or 4 hours every day just to get to school. So the sisters got to work, and they opened a dormitory to enable young girls to be able to get an education without making such an arduous journey. Around 600,000 people attended the Mass in East Timor. The Tasitulu Field was a sea of yellow and white Vatican-themed umbrellas to provide protection from the scorching sun. Some people told me that they arrived at 4:30 a.m. to get their spots for the Mass, which started at 4:30 p.m. The massive Mass concluded the Pope's schedule for today. Tomorrow, the 87-year-old Pope will meet with young people in East Timor before flying to Singapore for the final leg of the longest journey of his pontificate. In Dili, East Timor, Courtney Mares, EWTN News.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.